When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Okay. This episode needs an epic setup. So before any kind of reveal, let's just do an epic setup. Ready, Robbie?
I'm ready.
We've tried to build a safe space in this community. Our friends from Work Plus listeners know that. They know that. Uh-huh. Today, I need that safe space. So I need all of our listeners to have grace, to have an open mind, to be gentle, slow to anger. Today is that day. I had not seen Dark Phoenix. I've never seen New Mutants. I barely had seen Apocalypse. We've talked about that so many times. So going back through this journey was really fascinating because I think a lot of X1 and X2, like from our community, is viewed fairly positively. So then when I got it, I was like, oh, dang. Yeah, this is actually really good. Who knew? And then there is definitely a sentiment amongst the X-Men community, amongst our community, that, hey, once you get to kind of after Days of Future Past, the wheels fall off. And I remember recording an episode where I said, what happens? Because I'm liking this so far. And everyone in our community on Discord, just online, always kind of points to this movie. Like I had friends text me, just wait till you get to Dark Phoenix. And I had listeners say that, like, oh man, we're including Dark Phoenix in this? Come on. We can't be doing that too.
Right.
There was just a lot of that sentiment. And so I definitely went in to this whole process kind of knowing that today would come. Like eventually I would feel the pain of Dark Phoenix and that we had to watch it and like, why are we wasting our time? And the craziest thing happened to Annika and I cannot explain this. I thought this movie was good, man. I thought this was a good movie. That's where I need this to be a safe space. So I liked this movie so much that I got to the, and this is not a joke. Nothing I've said has been a joke. I got to the end of the movie and Annika and I had a legit conversation about what am I missing? How is this the one that gets pointed at as being the problem child? I had to literally, this can sound crazy. I'm not joking. I had to rack my brain for what are the things that people don't like about it? Like how in the world does this have 22% and how does Apocalypse have 48%? I would totally flip-flop those and then some. So I have so many notes, Robbie. Just know that whole 3-minute intro was to say, I'm as excited to talk about this as maybe I've ever been on Friends from Work Plus, legitimately, because it feels like it's back to the foundation of the podcast, which is taking something that maybe not everybody appreciates and finding this stuff. I didn't have to work hard. I liked it. I'm out there, Jerry, and I'm loving every second of it. I'm loving every second of it. I'm out there. I'm not going to say it's a tier one movie. A couple of listeners said, I dare you to tell Robbie it's a tier one movie. It's not a tier one movie. But when I expected it to be an absolute train wreck, it is far from that, in my opinion. And I have so many specifics. My notes are 90% positive. Total inverse of Apocalypse. where every note was negative. And it was really because that was the movie that let me down. That was the mistake after Days of Future Past. That's where we messed all this stuff up. I weirdly felt like so much stuff was improved in this movie. Holy cow. I'm out there. It feels good to say it. It feels good to get off my chest.
Oh, man. Okay. So that was an incredible intro, and I'm not going to redo that or even touch it more than is necessary. But I will say, you know, you and I were recording She-Hulk, getting ready to, and you had said, and I think at this point it was the second or third time you had said something about being really interested and really excited about recording this episode on Dark Phoenix. And then I went on Discord and I saw your, like, not spoilery, but just your vague reactions. And I was like, wow, I think Kyle liked this movie, me having not watched it yet. And by the way, I think I've said before now several times that Dark Phoenix is a movie that I think I put on at some point and couldn't finish. Now, I should say, often what I mean by that is not, you know, I'm watching this and reach a point where I'm just so disgusted I turn it off, or like it's so bad I just refuse to let my eyeballs like be exposed to it for any longer. It's more that the movies that I normally don't make it all the way through are movies that I'm kind of like, like Justice League, like the original Joss Whedon Justice League, where I'm like, this seems like something that I should see based on like my general interests. People ask me my thoughts on it. Like, this is like a from a cultural relevance perspective, something that I should be aware of. But obviously I didn't care enough to see it in theaters or even to sit down and watch it intentionally when it first came out. So that also means I'm kind of coming into it like with it having to do like an uphill climb sort of a thing as a movie. And so I was thinking back to that and looking at your reaction, and I was like, man, I remember turning this on. I remember exactly where I was living when I did it. I remember feeling just so like meh and like, wow, so glad that the MCU exists and that our faith is not in this franchise that was kind of sputtering out. Especially because, you know, this movie came out in 2019, and we've kind of all through this been tracing, you know, what's going on in the rest of superhero cinema while these movies are coming out. And obviously in 2019, Avengers Endgame came out. And so and it came out like a month or two before this movie. So, you know, it was kind of like, I don't know if there was ever going to be a world where this could break through. Kind of like what we were talking about in 2014, but you know, way, way, way amped up. So all that said, that was my only real memory of the movie, was that I didn't feel the need to finish it and never really felt the need to see it all the way through in the first place. So I sat down watching it with that on one shoulder and on the other shoulder, this like, wow, Kyle, I think liked this movie. So it's going to be either really interesting to see like why he and I are so different, or it will be really interesting to see why I'm viewing this so differently than I viewed it a couple of years ago. And man, you're right.
That's what you're getting to? I was letting you go for 4 minutes to see where that was going.
Dude, it's okay. Here's okay,
hold on. I have so much. Robbie, I'm telling you, I've never felt this passion. I have so much I want to say. I don't know what to do.
So, okay, I just want to say two things that are not even, these are just the notes as I was writing them, just to kind of give you a sense of where I stood. And then this is, I'm going to drop a warm take and then a hot take, and then I'm going to back up and then you're
running away from the explosion.
I'm running away. First, my notes for like the first, you know, 15, 20 minutes as I'm going through, we'll get back to some of the ones where I want to comment on certain details of the movie. But at 12 minutes in, I wrote, okay, this is way better than Apocalypse, right?
Yes.
But I also noted it's 12 minutes in. So who knows? Then at 45 minutes.
Can I legit say something real quick? Because at that exact moment, my first three notes are music by Hans Zimmer, which we'll talk about. I wrote, I legit didn't realize it was the same cast. For some reason, I literally thought this was like a spinoff movie. Like, I didn't realize it's the same X-Men.
I think you're thinking of New Mutants.
Okay, I didn't realize it was a continuation of what we had been watching. And then I wrote, the astronaut sequence was pretty dope. Like, it's fun to see the team operate. So far, this is not a 22% movie. That's my exact note.
Yeah. and that's like, I think we were having the same experience going through this. And I kept thinking, okay, it's going to likely go off the rails. I remember the Jessica Chastain alien stuff being goofy, and I was just kind of waiting for the moment where it like really started getting laughably bad. Because again, 22% movie. And I got to 45 minutes left in the movie. And at this point, you know, I feel like the movie has kind of become what it's going to be. And I didn't get a sense, just knowing the story was adapting, that there was going to be some like crazy left turn, which wound up being true. And I was like, okay, this is definitely better than Apocalypse. Here's my, that's my warm take, my hot take. I think this is a better movie.
I'm literally on pins and needles. This is the happiest I've been in a while. This is like a therapy session. It's like a therapy session. Okay. Audience, listen to me. Please, audience. I swear on my mother's grave, whatever you want to swear on, Robbie and I have not talked about this. I have not bounced my opinions off him. So this is unbelievable. I had no idea. I thought maybe today would be combative. I thought we'd be combative today. But listen to me. Listen to me. I have chills. Please. Listen. I think that we have to start with the context, Robbie, because we talked about the context with Apocalypse. I think it matters so freaking much. We've talked about how on Rotten Tomatoes, recent scores already are influenced by, like, for example, we've talked about Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania is a better movie than Thor 1. Hands down.
Right.
But Thor 1 has a 1%, and Quantumania has a 45%. That is more an encapsulation of the moment in time of the superhero fatigue of where Marvel was going and people feeling like this is a sidestep versus an origin story, et cetera. So I think that's in play, first of all. I think that a lot of people must have been already checked out, right? Like, this is peak MCU. How can you care about this movie at the time?
Right.
Okay. I think a lot of people are also burdened by all the restarts with Days of Future Past and Apocalypse and like the timeline issues, like to the point where it's weighing heavily on this movie before you even watch it. I think it feels already like peripheral. If you go back through though, and you watch it like I did, having never seen it, I'll also give the caveat, Robbie, that I think there is something fun about having truly never seen it. Like, this wasn't me uncovering something. This was watching a new movie. And sometimes just not knowing what's going to happen is fun. So I have to say that probably inflates the score a little bit, right? Like, I'm probably a little bit more excited just because I don't know where we're going for sure. But I think this also, I'm guessing, because again, Robbie, I got through the end of the movie and I'm like, this is a pretty good movie.
Yeah.
And you said the first class thing. Here's what I have. Days of Future Past, X2, tier one, in the 90%. X1, first class, tier two, and then I had it shortly followed by Dark Phoenix. But I have Dark Phoenix above the Wolverine, above Apocalypse, above X3, and above Origins. I have a hard time even thinking that you could argue otherwise. That's what's so weird about this, and I'm going to spend the next 45 minutes arguing for it. That, again, I don't think it's the best movie ever. I don't think it's Infinity War. I don't think it's Endgame, but you X people are crazy. You're crazy that you think this is the movie to not watch. It might be better than first class. It might be in so many ways better than first class. So last thing, Robbie, I think there also has to be a little bit of, I had to examine this. There has to be a little bit of the bro culture, woke, Me Too pushback movement at this time, like 2019 to 21 being the height of that kind of, just because there are a couple lines about like women power, you know, that I think are a little on the nose and must have pissed off some bros on the internet.
And
there has to be a little bit of that with the scores, AKA She-Hulk and Captain Marvel. Do you know what I'm talking about? Yeah, there's two lines.
No, for sure. And I should say like that, I think I referenced a Simon Kinberg writing bit from this movie that,
but it's really those three lines. That's it, though. It's really like three times you didn't have to hit us over the face with it, with the hammer. You could have let the movie do the talking, but still, it's not that bad. Yeah. That part of it too is the cringe.
Part of it too is the delivery. I think like that Jennifer Lawrence, like ex-woman line, it's just everything about that feels so forced.
For sure, Like, I'm not going to go as far as you, but I did take note of that. Like, surely the score has some of the pushback there from those lines.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. That's the thing. It's just anytime something like that, when it's that forced and on the nose, it almost goes. You're now not really pleasing anybody, in my opinion, because I don't think that like. I would think often in a scene like that with a line like that, if I'm a woman, that feels almost pandering.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like. Yeah, I'm with you 100%.
Whereas
the guys are kind of like, okay, we get it.
Yeah,
and the girls are kind of like,
especially that kind of guy.
Did we need that? We can like we're gathering. That's the point already, right?
Right, because it almost makes it like. It makes it this little like pat on the head, like, see, there you go.
Right.
And, there you
and
go, girls.
And there was one other line where Jessica Chastain says, like, these little, like, unintelligent men trying to give you orders or something, which is a little bit, again, where I'm like, okay, she's talking about Charles. I wouldn't say he's dumb. You know, like, that feels a little too on the nose.
Right.
That Charles was, like, dumb, but you're not, Jean. But again, okay. We have so much to get into. I guess what I'm trying to say is my point is I thought this movie was so good that I had to do serious examination in the credits with my wife going like, what am I missing? What's the context of this? Like how? And that's how I came to that conclusion that I think the timing mattered, the woke bros affecting the scores.
I totally agree. And I do think it's hard because like when this movie came out, Disney had already bought Fox. Like everyone knew that had happened. And so this was kind of like a lame duck thing also, like where it was just, and that's one of the big reasons why I feel like it was such a box office bomb.
Yeah.
Because everyone knew like, again, for sure. And I don't think that should even be the case, by the way. Like, I think that we're kind of moving out of that, but we were in a phase that was in large part like driven by the MCU of we want everything to be like cumulative. Like we don't want to watch a movie that's just a movie. We want to watch a movie that like kind of, again, what you and I were talking about with She-Hulk, like something that moves the ball forward. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that impulse, but I do think that it's, you know, it's not totally fair to gauge every individual thing by whether it's part of a larger narrative. And so, but I think that was part of it. Like even the X-Men fans that would have gone to see this, I think were like, you know, what's the point? Like it just got sold over anyway. Like this movie is like, it feels like it's not really made for anybody. And so that's probably part of it.
I think so too. So then let me hit you with this, Robbie. This is what I think. It's not a perfect movie, and if I was trying to make it a perfect movie, these are the things that struck me negatively. I do think there are a few cheesy lines. We talked about that. Like at the very, very end, I'm not sure the whole struggle was about Jean controlling her emotions. So it's kind of weird that the last line is like, that's no, funny. I'm better when I am emotional. I was like, wait, that's like one of those lines I'm kind of talking about where I was like, wait, were we...
Yeah.
Was this whole story about like a girl not controlling her emotions? Like, I don't remember the, like, again, that can be an impactful thing to do. And they kind of play with that in Ms. Marvel, sorry, in Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
But
which I think it's done much more effectively there, because from the very first scene with her and Jude Law, they set up that as the conflict.
Yeah. Yep. So this line at the end, I was like, it's not that it was so bad. It was more like, oh, I didn't know the movie was about that. Like, I thought it was about Jean being super strong and learning to control her power, but I didn't know it was about her being a girl and being too emotional. So yeah. I there were a few lines like that. The ex-woman thing was a little too on the nose. The space explanation and obviously the alien side of it is it's not terrible. It's just a little much. It's a little much. Uh-huh. Like at the end, that this is a life force to create like all living beings. It's a little much, like the explanation, but cry me a river if you think that's a little bit too sci-fi. We've done some serious weird stuff in this franchise. It's not like that's the only weird thing ever. And weirdly, again, I don't think the aliens are awesome, but I do like that they kind of keep them ambiguous. Like, you only see a shadow of them a couple times. It's not like the whole movie is a bunch of aliens in a circle constantly like chanting and coming up with some kind of, you know what I mean? Like, they take over the humans, they cave in chests. Okay, Apocalypse caved in chest too. It's a little too much, but it's not the end of the world. Plus, not as much of the movie is about the aliens as I think it kind of leads on. Like, in the beginning, you're like, oh man, is it about an alien invasion? And it's not fully about an alien invasion, really. So I thought a few cheesy lines. I thought the thing was a little much. And then it was maybe one step too far in trying to force that Charles, to me, was a villain. Like, I get it. Charles has a great past, and there are some mistrust things. And I actually think it was executed pretty well, and it's a unique plot to explore. But I thought it was one step too far at times, where it's like, dude, you're trying to say, like, he is the bad guy. Like, he is the reason for all of this. And I'm like, I don't think one lie, a white lie to Jean about her dad, should be enough to set the entire X-Men on this trajectory of Charles doesn't care about anyone anymore except himself. Yeah. So I thought that was one step too far. I kid you not, that's it. Every other thing I'm going to say, Annika and I were kind of geeking out about. It sounds crazy.
Yeah.
But we were.
No, I love it. I've got you actually hit, I have very few what doesn't work notes. I was also going to suggest that we hit those at the top.
I love it.
For the same reason. I think you hit most of mine. The only thing I was going to note, you know, performance wise, I thought there are a couple of moments, especially like early on, like where I felt like Sophie Turner was not super settled in. But then I felt like later in the movie, it actually got pretty good.
She's light years better than Apocalypse, right?
So much
better.
Like,
it's pretty good.
So much better.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Even Jennifer Lawrence was better, I thought.
Robbie, my note was, you know, I hate Jennifer Lawrence. The whole podcast knows I hate Jennifer Lawrence. My note was, they killed Jennifer Lawrence when she was finally doing her best work ever.
I know. Well,
which
part of it,
I'm not
she
mad
also
about
because
I'm okay with her being gone. But do you agree that this was her best entry?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, Days of Future Past, I feel like I'm more comfortable with that character in the kind of more villain role. So I thought that it was, she just was better suited. But yeah, from like a strictly, you know, Jennifer Lawrence is handed a script and just does the best she can with it, I feel like this is probably her best work.
The death sequence was fairly moving to me. I thought that was executed magnificently well.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I think that does kind of lead into a couple of like, I guess really just two story complaints. One, it's weird to me. We talked about this last time. Don't have to like belabor it. The time jump thing was the wrong call, because we are now supposed to be 30 years after First Class. So Charles is supposed to be like 60 here.
It's the 90s here. Is that right?
Yeah, it's 92. And okay, yeah, I double checked this. I like went online and I think he and Magneto were both supposed to be 60 years old. And it's just funny because like the first X-Men came out in 2000. So it's that like Obi-Wan thing again, where it's like, okay, so you're saying, you know, within like a decade now, we're going from like fairly young looking Ian McGregor to like the Obi-Wan of A New Hope. It's like the same thing here where, again, it doesn't really matter.
No, but it's weird because you're 100 trillion percent right. I think I've literally just been so beaten down by the X-Men timeline doesn't make sense that my brain now is just okay. Like I'm not watching a movie looking for any continuity, which is weird because that's normally something I like. But you're 100% right. It's terrible that they went the decade thing. But I didn't think about it one time while watching.
Yeah. No, I think it's, to me, the missed opportunity there, and this is something that I would love to see the MCU play with. I mean, I don't know. Like, Fantastic Four will be interesting in this regard. Like, I thought going back to First Class and, like, reimagining the X-Men in the 60s era when the comic was actually coming out was such a fun idea in theory, and I felt like that was not, like, again, I'm so much harder on First Class than everybody else, just because it feels like the movie just feels clunky and there's a lot of cheesiness, and like I just don't like Days of Future Past is when I feel like the series, like, it took advantage of some of the 70s vibes. Like, I thought Singer did a good job with that, and I think that if I had my way, given that like the 70s is when X-Men really took off as a comic, and that's when the Chris Claremont stuff starts, like, I think it would have been fun to just start there and let that be the starting point, and then let people age naturally, kind of like MCU style, except instead of it all starting in 2008, it starts in the 70s, and then you can just go however long you want and let people be the actual age that they are. It doesn't, again, not worth belaboring, but like, I just want to say I understand why they started that. Again, to your point at the very beginning, it makes me think that Apocalypse really was the thing that broke this, because if you had like left after Days of Future Past and just continued in the 70s with that group, like right in the aftermath of Days of Future Past, then I feel like you have so many things open up to you. And maybe, you know, we'd be in a different spot. Maybe Disney would have bought that and we would still have an ongoing X-Men franchise that was going to converge in its own way. But once they started that in Apocalypse, then I felt like they had like set that, like, oh, you know, we're going to do every decade, like something that feels, you know, unique to that. And that was also like in the height of 90s nostalgia, which Captain Marvel was kind of dipping into the same year. So I understand the impulse, but it is just funny. The funniest is with, not even with McAvoy and Fassbender, even though like they clearly do not in that movie look like they're 60 years old. It's funnier to me with like Jean and Scott and Nightcrawler.
For sure. By the way, I just put that together that Captain Marvel was the same year. Was Rise of Skywalker the same year as well?
Yep.
Okay, so that's it. That proves my point. All these movies caught stray bullets from the we're tired of female-led female power movies. That's 100% what happened that year. 100 trillion percent.
Yeah.
Because the huge pushback to Star Wars, too, was people were tired of Rey being all powerful and does Disney have to make every movie led by women? That's what the story was. Online. Yeah. And so I just that you said that was the same year. I'm like, oh my gosh, not only are they going back to the 90s, but that's for sure why people lumped these all together. Certainly. Keep going.
Which is funny because I feel like there have been things since then that, well, yeah, that's a whole other conversation, but I think you're right. I think
the timeline thing is jacked for sure. I'm with you. Next.
Yeah. My only other issue storyline-wise is something you also kind of hinted at. Not the Xavier being like the villain thing, I think it's just kind of annoying to me because I feel like we've now done that a couple times in the McAvoy Fassbender thing, like especially with Raven. Like, I just feel like
The first Raven's, one, he's a partier. Then in Days of Future Past, it's like he's going to be impossible to convince. And now here, he's kind of lying. Well,
and even in Apocalypse, I feel like there was something going on where like they were trying to get him to like, it was something with him and Raven or him and Eric. It's always this like, oh, Charles is so naive. Like, that's something that I think I'm more comfortable with, is this like, you know, he's not pragmatic in the ways that Eric and Raven are. But it's just like, I don't know, like they're making him so much of an egomaniac at certain points, or not making him, but make everyone say over and over again how much of an egomaniac he is, that it's like, yep. I understand, and that, you know, again, that is rooted in the comics. Like, when you read through, there are times where it's like, man, Professor X is being like a legit jerk right now for no reason. And it's kind of that Reed Richards thing where it's like, you know, he's super smart, he's really powerful. But you have to do that, like, there's a balance there, you know, where like, and I think this movie actually winds up getting it right by the end. But I think like that was one thing. But I think the bigger part of that to me was how forced the Beast, Eric, like, we're both mad that Raven died. We both blame Charles, and we are both intent on killing Jean Grey.
Like, yeah, yeah. Taking
that's
it
the
out
only thing.
Well, I didn't mind Beast actually confronting Charles. I thought that was kind of
no. Weird. I thought that was a good scene.
Yeah, but yeah. To then translate it to, okay, that's it. Gene must die. Yeah.
It, yep. Felt it, a like, forced. And again, the Magneto stuff, like, I don't even really, like, it's another example to me, kind of like we talked about in The Last Stand, but not nearly that egregious here. But, like, I just don't know that would be Eric's response. Like, I feel like part of the interesting thing about his character in the first two films was like he kind of had this ideological consistency where he was above all like pro mutant, like I will like protect my people and I'll do whatever it takes to do that, but generally like I'm going to avoid hurting other mutants as much as possible. It just felt weird that he like so quickly went straight to like, yep, okay, let's go kill her. I just don't, it's again, for it's sure. Not terrible. And it winds up like, again, I think it's such a better way to bring him back into the fold than the Apocalypse thing, where it was like, and not just the, his family part of it, but also like, just this like Apocalypse shows up through a portal and it like kills these people for Eric and then is like, follow me, and he's like, okay, sure. Like that, like if you pulled that movie out again and just went straight here, then I actually think even this works better. But also it's a much, much, much more natural place to find him than somewhere like pretending to be human as like a lumberjack factory worker guy. Like I even that negative to me is surprisingly like, it's like a nimble part of this story compared to how like heavy handed it felt in Apocalypse, which is kind of like maybe my segue into the what worked part of this movie, because I think that was my takeaway consistently. Like I kept expecting this movie. Like, I was always thinking, I bet Apocalypse is better than I remember it because it's Bryan Singer, and every other Bryan Singer X-Men movie is pretty good. And it went downhill when Bryan Singer stepped away, and it kind of came back whenever he came back. But as much as I, like, trashed Simon Kinberg last episode, I think what's crazy is how much, like this is so much the better movie that it makes me rethink a lot of my assumptions around Bryan Singer, and makes me want to like, makes me excited to get into this next section with you.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like, yeah. I'm looking at this movie at him as a writer, like through, you know, at least a fresh perspective.
Okay. All right, here we go. Can we go now? Can we go? Do we?
Yeah,
all the disclaimers are set. The things we didn't love. It's not the best movie ever.
Oh. Last thing, the angry beast thing is also just funny to me at the very end because, like, it's just, like, you know, whenever Eric goes, like, super dark, there's always, like, these moments in the movies where you're like, oh, man, like, here we go, because he's just, like, he's legitimately terrifying and also such a badass. But Beast is just not, like... he's, like, when you look at all of the power sets around... For sure. And then Beast is just like, all right, let's go. And he just like starts jumping on cars, but then like gets in the road and like traffic's coming and he like stops because he like almost gets hit by a car. And the whole thing is I'm like, what is this? This is the front line. Like this is the, well, but again,
Eric,
it's a small
Eric
thing.
Eric couldn't choose his partner. I'm sure when Beast walked up, he was like, dang it. Couldn't have been anyone else walking up.
He's like, man, could have been Charles. That would have been a lot cooler.
Okay, I think part of it for me is that so many of the moments that they maybe tried to hit the same beats that they did in Apocalypse just worked here and they didn't there. I think there's a little bit of Age of Ultron fun for me where like the first space mission, it's just fun to kind of see the team working as a team, like Nightcrawler, grab this person, Scott, use the laser from the ship that we made. Like even again, Jennifer Lawrence, like leading the show, Charles being back home, empowering Jean. Like there's something fun to me about seeing these teams be operational when it's always that they're torn apart and they're not working. It's kind of fun. And so like a lot of those moments work. I think this is the best Scott we've ever got. You pointed that out two movies ago. This was a great Scott. I mean, he did great Scott. He did a great job. I mean, seriously, I was moved by his Jean moments. I also thought he just played at the perfect level of X-Men 97, Cyclops, where he's kind of Captain America-esque, but then contrast that to James Marsden's Cyclops. It's a little bit moodier, a little bit more emotional. He found a perfect middle ground, I felt like. And like his powers were kind of up tier in a cool way. I really liked Scott. And then I pointed out, I thought that Gene in general was light years better than the first appearance.
Yeah.
Not just better. Like I pointed out, she walked through that first movie. There was some real moments here in this second movie, I thought, from her. And just in general, like when the whole cast reassembles for the final fight, infinitely more than Apocalypse, I thought it was badass. Like just to see Eric working with them and what those powers can do and everyone on the different level of the train doing their job, again, Age of Ultron style, I was just like, I don't know. I was really into it.
Dude, no, I totally agree. And I feel like, I mean, one of my big takeaways here, maybe for the first time ever that I can remember, and I'm sure that I'm like missing some moment in the X-Men franchise, but like this is the first time I remember them being like a superhero team where they like even just going to space, like they're just,
and
they're
being
just
celebrated
saving the
by
day.
The president. Yeah.
Like I like that because that like that's the comics, right? Like the X-Men were initially a superhero team that had this unique background and like this different mutant element. But in the movies, like whereas Spider-Man is just out there like saving people and the Avengers are out there like a little bit more like militaristic, but still ultimately it's like, here's a catastrophe. We have to go save people. The X-Men are only ever saving people from other mutants or saving mutants from people that are trying to kill mutants. But there's never like a, oh, here's just a bad thing that's happening in this world and we're the heroes. So we're going to go like protect people.
That's the one really weird positive of doing the alien thing. Cause I'm sure that's one of the things that gets made fun of from a lot of people, but because it's an alien like life force, you get that, which is the X-Men can actually unite against something else that isn't just humans. And even the human interactions for me worked. So on top of them fighting against the aliens as a team, I bought it when the soldiers imprisoned them and they're begging the soldiers like, please let us out. Like it's not mutants are fighting. You need help. Like that even worked for me too. And here's the other thing.
Yeah.
It's now solidified in my brain. Magneto freaking rules.
Yeah.
Magneto, I think in general, is maybe my favorite character over Logan. Like if I had to bring two characters into the MCU, it'd be Magneto and Logan. Like I am totally on board with them specifically bringing Michael Fassbender as Magneto. Like, dude, can you imagine Michael Fassbender as Magneto with Marcus and McFeely and like the Russos directing it? Can you imagine how cool that could be, dude?
Yeah.
Like he's such a badass and he plays it in such a cool, that's what it is. It's cool. It's hard to explain. Such a cool way. His powers. I'm so excited right now. I love Magneto.
Dude, no, I mean, it's such a great, and this movie was, man, I just feel like everything dipped in Apocalypse, including
Magneto's Fassbender. Role. Yeah.
And here it was like, it feels more consistent, you know, with the version of him that has always felt kind of most true and most in line with what worked in X-Men 97.
It felt so similar to the X-Men 97 one, where he's on a different planet a la Genosha and is the leader and like takes the military talk calmly. You know, that's the X-Men 97 version.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I love the like, look, I don't want to fight you. And he's like, yeah, no, I think that's right.
Yeah, you like don't.
it's like he's just, even down to the ending, I thought the final scene with him and Charles in Paris was really well done and such a great ending to the whole franchise. And that to me, by the way, is where I have to say,
yes, please say it.
I thought this was by far the best James McAvoy has ever been as Xavier.
Okay, I don't know if I'd go that far, but absolutely it works. It works 100%.
I thought it was, it like even Days of Future Past, which is obviously a better movie. There are still those moments that you and I both recognized that I don't really like. It's so weird because this is the movie that everyone's like, oh man, they were just phoning it in and kind of like throwing it out there.
I know. That's
but
what I couldn't figure
this is the one
out.
Where he actually feels like he's landed on something. Like I'm like listening to him and I guess for me, it's the first time I buy him as quote unquote Professor X.
Dude, I know.
Which in part is because he wasn't really that early on, right? Like he was like becoming Professor X. But it's like here, like we kind of were supposed to have that moment in Apocalypse and it didn't really work for me. But here, like, yeah, I get it. Like I get what he's doing. I get how it links up with Patrick Stewart's version. Like it's a bummer because I'm like, if it had been like this the whole time, then I think we might again be looking at a different version of X-Men film history.
I just absolutely love it. There are people listening right now that are just dying at how much we like this movie at 22% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, I have no facts to back it up. It was a Rotten Tomatoes bomb. It was a critical bomb. It was a box office bomb, but I really liked it. I think I hadn't seen it. So it's just fun to kind of see where it's going. But I'm with you with McAvoy. I told you how I think the actual writing was a step too far at times, but the way he handles it, like in that confrontation with Beast, I found very moving, like him being like, whoa, Hank, you don't seriously think I'm the issue here when he's freaking out. Like, I liked all of it. Performance wise, I have my hands to my eyes right now. Performance wise, I would say this was some of the best Fassbender, McAvoy, the guy who plays Beast, Jennifer Lawrence, the guy who plays Scott, the girl, Sophie Turner, who plays Jean. I don't know all their names off the top of my head. This was like my favorite ensemble. And on top of that, this movie lost some of the characters that I thought struggled, right? So like there's no Angel, thank the Lord, right? Like
there is no Psylocke.
Right. So they cut out some of the weirdo characters and then like it worked. Like the chemistry between the whole cast, dude, this is so weird. Even the party sequence, I was like, this is kind of fun, like Age of Ultron, to see like the team of X-Men celebrating a victory, you know, like, and people feeling kind of natural. Like Scott and Jean felt fairly natural there. Like the way Scott was written to protect Jean felt normal without it ever getting too far. Like the chemistry between all of them was working. It's the best McAvoy, dude. I really liked it. I really liked it. Dude,
so no, I thought McAvoy from the first scene with Jean, I was like, oh wow, okay. Like this is different. Like, and that was funny coming into this.
Oh, like the little girl Jean. That stuff was great at the hospital. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah. The only thing about that scene, not that part, but that whole story element, the two things that like are not real complaints, but were just kind of funny to me. One, anytime you introduce a character, especially if it's a kid and they're in the car with their parents, it's like what I said about Apocalypse, where it's like we knew from the moment his family was introduced that they were going to die to give him motivation.
Like Echo.
And I'm like,
oh, it's a flashback. Here we go.
It's like, okay, well, like there's going to be a car wreck and she's going to, you know, be traumatized by watching her parents die. But again, that's fine. The other thing that was just kind of funny is like, man, her dad was just clearly not interested in fatherhood. Yeah. Like, I love that he's trying to make it this thing where he was like, she's just a lost cause, man. And it's like, wait, what?
Like, because she turned the radio?
Maybe. Like, because she maybe turned. Like, he doesn't even, like, I don't even know what he thinks she has done that makes her like. Like, I get the, like, oh, you know, maybe he blames her for the death of his mother. But, like, I don't, that's not even something that feels warranted. Like, aside from the fact that she's a kid, even if she were, like, an adult and the radio station starts suddenly changing and then now it's, like, there's a car wreck and they're going to blame it on, like, the person that was maybe changing the radio station, that still is wild to me.
But can I ask one question really quick? You know, you see that first scene of the car accident. And again, I've only seen the movie one time. And it's because of the chaos of changing the radio station and then the little Jean going, like, make it stop. I'm not trying to talk to you. You know how they come back to that sequence when they reveal that her father's still alive? They come back to it. On a different angle, it almost looked like they were trying to show that those voices torturing Jean physically moved her mom. Like, it wasn't just the radio station, I thought, like, her mom could hear something, too. Like, she, like, tilts her head before the accident and pulls the steering wheel into the other car instead of just, like, looking back at Jean. I don't know. So I didn't know if maybe there was something there that, like, physically there was, like, a sound or something, too, for her mom that was driving her crazy or something.
I do think, to your point, I feel like there was a moment where she was, like, quiet, and, like, maybe, like her mom's eyes close all of a sudden.
Yeah. Something happened to her mom before the accident,
which could have been, could have been Jean, like, you know, she's getting all the voices coming in and she doesn't know how to control them. So she's just like issuing a stop order that like knocks her mom unconscious, which then causes her to veer into traffic. But even then, like from the dad perspective,
for sure.
I don't like, how would he have even been aware enough?
Yeah,
it's just interesting to me that he so quickly in the aftermath is like, yeah, take her,
man. For sure. He's grieving. And we don't know how much he knew about Jean's powers before that moment, right? Although they're trying to kind of show us that they're surprised the radio station's changing as if she hasn't been doing this since birth kind of thing, right? Like they're trying to show that he doesn't know a ton about it. Because I also think when it's weird, when she shows back up as an adult, he's like partially surprised that she has this much power, but partially not too. I don't know. I couldn't tell. Anyways, I'm a little bit weirded out because if you remember The Last of Us, that's the guy that plays like one of the creepiest characters.
Yeah.
In The Last of Us. I won't spoil
that. That's right. But I was trying to figure out what I recognized him from. Oh, you know what? He was in Killers of the Flower Moon also.
Oh, yeah. Yep. again, my note here to come back to another thing is 75% through the movie, my note is I'm into this way more than I should be. And it's weird kind of watching a movie with the expectation of you're supposed to dislike this.
Yeah.
And then feeling like you don't at all dislike it. In fact, it's like very much what you kind of wanted it to be. Also, I just got to say, so like that's my expectation. Like, I'm going to dislike this. I've been told this is terrible. There are still people out there right now that are going to rip us on Discord saying you guys are crazy. It is terrible.
Right.
And so when the intro credits rolled and it said music by Hans Zimmer, I was like, oh my gosh, this is a Hans Zimmer movie. Weird. So I was like, this must have been just one of his weird flops. But then I'm watching the movie going, I kind of like this. It has a totally different tone than all the other X-Men. Like, there's not a superhero tone to it at all. It almost has more of a Interstellar feel throughout.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I knew that he did this movie because I've listened to this. He's got like, there's the score and then he'll do these kind of extended, like he did one for Dune too. Like in Dune, they call it like a sketchbook. I forget what he calls it here, but it's like the fully extended versions of like all these motifs, and it's a great score that just kind of stands alone. You're right, like similar to some of the Nolan stuff where it's like it's kind of powerful but it's not super anthemic. It's kind of like more vibey.
Yeah, an emotional vibe that just kind of keeps growing thing.
Yeah,
it, like I couldn't sing it back to you right now, but
yeah, and in like in that sense, you know, I still think that like that original X-Men theme, like I liked hearing that some in Apocalypse.
Yeah, the original theme is so cool. I'm just kind of making the point that by omitting that theme, the whole film has less of a superhero team feel to it because of Hans Zimmer.
Yeah,
and I thought that was going to be a bad thing, like he just missed. But then by the end, I was like really into it to where I'm like, okay, it's working. It did work, obviously.
Yeah, and it weirdly, it does work. Like, because I think the movie, and I just never got this sense at all. Like, I think, again, part of the reason why I was expecting to like Apocalypse more is, like, the singer piece, but also just the fact that I knew that to be a, like, okay, we've got our kind of new cast, our younger Cyclops and Jean and Storm, and like we're going to kind of get to see this play out. And that movie's just like such a mess, and Apocalypse is such a bad villain in that I feel like none of that, like they're trying that, but it doesn't really connect.
Here's my thing. Apocalypse is boring. It's just legit boring and bland to me. It's lifeless. Actually has a feel. Whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because this is a huge pro for this movie. We talked about how there was kind of the power level, like, whether you look at it as a power level thing or just a rules, like, either way, Apocalypse, by the end of the movie, it kind of feels like nothing matters because Apocalypse seems to be essentially invincible. The level of destruction that's happening is so gratuitous that it's
like, but it's
like,
toned down here. Is that what you're going to say? It's toned down.
Like, I loved how the alien villains wound up working out. One, for the reason you said earlier, just that they're not mutants. I love that, like, also kind of as you alluded to, because we're living in this universe, unlike the MCU, where the only superpowered people are mutants, it makes so much sense that they would assume that these aliens that are disguised as humans are all mutants. I thought that that was an interesting element that I hadn't really thought about. But like, the bigger thing to me is, I guess, the two bigger things. One, I love that like the battle sequences here are fairly contained.
Oh, it's like, so reined in, dude. It's so much better.
It's so nice. Like, we know that the stakes are high, and they're giving us the, like, you know, the whole planet, the whole universe, the whatever.
Right. That's the part that I was like, I don't know if it even needs that because it's working without it.
Agreed. But I liked that was like, it was said like once or twice, and it was kind of in the background to show you like, okay, this isn't just these people fighting over Jean Grey. There are like things beyond yeah. that make this again them saving the world. But right. I love that like yeah, if you're gonna do that, which I think we would argue you don't ever have to go that far unless you were like doing the Avengers Endgame like culmination of a whole thing. But if you are gonna do that, this is absolutely the way to do it. Like, you can make the stakes be super high without it having to be something where like you are seeing the core like ripped out of the planet in real time. And then, you know, now we have to just pretend like 10 years later that the world is just kind of functioning normally, like that there wasn't this like almost world ending event. So I love that piece. But the other piece that's like kind of more subtle, I really appreciated that the aliens could be killed by like heavy rounds of like artillery, not by normal guns, but by like whenever they had someone that had like a, you know, like full on machine gun, they could like, and so there were rules. Like you watch somebody and it's like, okay, they died and they died. Like they didn't get back up. They didn't magically, like there was a little bit of magical healing when someone just tried to take them out with like an assault rifle. But like whenever they had like whatever you call that like fixed gun thing is,
yep.
like they would consistently kill them. And I appreciate that.
Robbie, you've never been more right. I have chills. I've never been more in lockstep with you. Therefore, I've never been more right. Okay. So this is full blown chills for me. It matters. It matters so much. And it's a perfect example. Robbie, everything in the actual action made sense in this movie. It really did. Exactly what you're saying. First of all, the humans are actually kind of a threat because their heavy guns did kill them. And they kept that consistent. Anytime one of the high caliber machine guns shot the aliens or a mutant, it could kill them. But when even Magneto took every gun that was lower caliber to the main girl, it didn't do anything because she has the life force in her. And also those little guns weren't killing the mutants. So like the rules all made sense. Sorry, not the mutants.
Yep.
They weren't killing the aliens. So like right away, I'm like, the back of my subconscious is okay with the entire fight scene because the rules have been laid out. Also, remember after Apocalypse, I told you the tagline for Dark Phoenix was they face an even greater threat. I love that. Right. I didn't feel that. Like Jean is strong, but even her strengths or her bursts of the quote unquote Dark Phoenix coming out were just like an energy blast that would kill one person or knock everybody down to where people are like, okay, look out, she's strong, but it's not like a world consuming fire when she loses it.
Yeah.
To where it's like, what's the point? So even that, I thought like making Charles walk to her was a really good way of being like, wow, she is really strong, but it's not, it's not like we can't grasp what's happening, you know? And then instead of Magneto tearing apart the entire core of the earth and the Sydney Opera House, he works hard to lift a subway car out of the ground.
Yeah.
Or him and Jean wrestle over a helicopter.
Yeah.
That's the level I want, where I'm like, dang, these mutants are a problem if you're a human because they can just throw your helicopters around. But also, okay, I get that kind of strength. It's not like he's melting the inner earth. Okay.
Yeah.
He's taking one helicopter and he's struggling with it.
And the thing that I appreciate too, and again, I kind of feel like you just have to pull Apocalypse out of this. And, you know, like, it's so funny. I think if I had, like when we were first setting out the watch order for X-Men stuff, like I still think that there's a lot to be said for just ending this franchise with Days of Future Past. But if you were going to do anything, I would like be much more comfortable just skipping straight from Days of Future Past to this, because it feels like it is a if nothing else, like an epilogue. But I would say, like, setting Apocalypse aside and kind of the showdown between Jean and him there, I appreciated, you know, Kinberg wrote The Last Stand, and famously he wanted to make Dark Phoenix like a way to salvage that storyline that he felt he had personally botched with the Dark Phoenix stuff there. And I remember always thinking, like, man, what a brutal, brutal thing to, like, have this shadow of this franchise that you kind of derailed, like, looming over you, then to finally get a chance to, like, step up and redo it entirely yourself and direct it, and for it to be such a failure. And now watching it, like, I still feel that way because it is seen as a failure, so it has to suck for him. But it is interesting, like, he clearly had given some thought to the things that made that iteration so bad and the things that didn't work. And, like, off the top of my head, you know, the major thing, the Phoenix Force being in play here versus it being this thing that's just, like, a subconscious level of power that Jean has always had. That is huge for me from, like, a power levels perspective, because it makes sense why she's now struggling for control the way she is. It's not just that, like, some block or wall went down and now it's like she's got dueling personalities. It's like there's a little bit of that. He can't get away from it entirely. So we still do get that, like, what has Charles reined in within Jean conflict. But I feel like the fact that the power and the real temptation is coming from this external force explains, like, why Jean is so much, like ramped up beyond everybody else here. And also why, like,
they kept it attainable, though. Like, it's ramped up, but not, like...
No, exactly. And that was the thing, too. Like, I love that whenever she's, like... You get these little, and this is what made me think of The Last Stand, these little, like, glimpses of the, you know, Scott's hand, like, starting to dissolve away, or, like, the walls, like, the paint chips coming off. And it's, like, it's clearly kind of hearkening back to the way Jean's powers looked in X3. But we never get anything really beyond that. Like, we never see people, like... just getting, like, evaporated in, like, waves of power. Like, she's at least normally, like, even at the end with aliens, she's having to, like, reach out and either touch those people or, like, extend an arm in their direction, which I know is dumb, like, to point out that as a distinction, but it's like she is at least having to fight, and, like, she gets, like, stabbed at one point in that fight and recovers from it and turns around and, like, takes out that alien anyway. But
right,
it's like,
that's a huge thing that she actually does get hurt.
She's not this, like, omnipotent thing that makes everybody else irrelevant.
Yes, dude. I can't tell you how much I like that part.
It's just like, it really is in that way. It is the opposite of so much of what I think we complained about with Apocalypse.
Right. I actually thought things looked better visually regarding their powers. For example, I thought it was really cool how Jean would just take off and fly away. Like, that's the way she flew away from sequences is how I want Wanda to fly away. Like, how I wish Wanda had flown away from WandaVision like that. And, like, even Magneto, when he just, like, levitates out, it looked cooler. But there's something about the way they, again, manipulated her flying to where it establishes, oh, like, she's the top of the food chain. She's the powerhouse villain that can fly that easily. It's not that easy for everybody. It shouldn't be that easy. But it also just looked cool to where it didn't look fake almost. So I could buy it still, basically. So again, just setting the rules with her.
Yeah. Like, the visuals in general. By the way,
it wasn't like a massive flying fight all the time, right? Like, the very last sequence happened in the sky, but it wasn't like Superman in Batman versus Superman, where it's like, it becomes, honestly, it's like one of the things I didn't like about the Marvels when Monica Rambeau could then fly and then it kind of looked weird. This is an example of how I would do it, which is very sparing. But when you do, make it look like she's just exiting the camera to the top. Yeah, it wasn't the best looking sci-fi movie I've ever seen. But again, because of the contained action sequences, it was pretty awesome. Like, Robbie, even the train sequence, which there's a lot of action movies that have train sequences, but by putting it on a train, you kind of remove it from like it having to be in Times Square and the amount of damage that would do.
Yeah.
So like to actually have helicopters chasing the aliens, trying to shoot, almost zombie-like, you know, trying to shoot the aliens with a big machine gun off the top, and then all the fighting kind of happening on these train cars. And then like when McNeil squishes the train car,
like all of that,
which was so sick, by the way, holy cow. All of that, I don't know. It was the perfect balance of cool while still feeling real weirdly and nothing getting out of control. And yeah, it looked good.
Like you talking about the Times Square thing. One, I totally agree with you. This is going to sound like I'm making the opposite point, but it just made me think there is that scene where they're clearly in New York. Like she's in that like townhouse.
Yeah. With, it is New York. Yep.
And
next to Central Park, it looks like, or something.
And I liked that because I love that. Again, that battle was so contained.
Well, like, yeah. Think about the damage there. A few cars, the subway car got pulled through the floor. But we never get like a zoomed out shot of New York on fire or something.
No, exactly. But what I liked is like just them being in New York again. Like it's so funny. And this is the crazy thing to me. Whenever I've thought watching back through these, you know, what is it that I would like to see in an MCU X-Men movie? I realized this checks a lot of those boxes and like,
listen to us.
I know. When I was saying at the very start of this though, like, you know, I love that they're superheroes. Like there was just something about, okay, they've got the yellow uniforms here that I think look pretty great. Like they're like new X-Men, Grant Morrison era, like, which is kind of what First Class was doing, but these look better for like way better, I think. But then also even beyond that, like just the like the aesthetics of the team and the way that those battles look, like you said, like we got really fun, like well-imagined Cyclops action, really fun, well-imagined Nightcrawler action. There were great Storm moments.
Was so cool. All those when he finishes that
like
clicking sound.
At the end, whenever he goes like full on with the blades, which is something that I don't feel like we've ever seen in a live action adaptation.
Dude, I thought it was pretty sick when Charles is in the battle with the other psychic and he's stuck, and so they can't do anything. And then finally, when they take out that other psychic, and he goes, "Kurt, get me inside that house now!" I thought it was sick. And then Kurt gets over and does it.
It's like I thought. Like that one, all of these actors that I feel like I maybe, no, I don't know that we were hard on them, but I didn't have like a lot of good things to say. Correct. After Apocalypse.
Even
like,
Storm had some cool moments.
Like I'm like, okay, I buy all this. Like that's why I'm like, I get like if this had been the follow-up again to Days of Future Past and it took place like in the 70s or at least in like the I don't know probably just the 70s then I could see like a whole thing coming out of this that I would be kind of interested in following, like just because these versions of the characters feel recognizably like the X-Men to me, and
I agree. I
like that.
I hope listeners, please don't stop supporting us now. Like, I'm nervous we're going to lose people. I'm with you. I would have been intrigued if this is kind of how it had gone. This is the weirdest movie to say this about, but it's the first time that it actually kind of gives me some hope about what it could look like to have some of the characters in the MCU, which I never would have expected it from this film. I think back to our original premise, I think First Class struggles with some things that this movie doesn't, and then vice versa. So
agreed.
I think they're pretty close, but I'm with you. People, this is 22% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'm not kidding. This would be one of the best 22% movies I've ever seen. For real.
Yeah.
I felt like I was taking crazy pills. And again, I think context matters, but I think I might change this even. Well, maybe I will right now because I did like it. I'm going to go Days of Future Past 1, X2, 2, X1, 3. I think those three are pretty much better than every other movie, really, no matter how you look at it.
Agreed.
And then I think I'm going to go Dark Phoenix 4, First Class 5, The Wolverine 6, yeah. Apocalypse 7, X3, 8, and Origins 9, which almost concludes our entire journey. Dude,
I know. We have to, just in case anybody does get very mad, we have to have the caveat that we are only covering the ones we've seen. So we're not including the Deadpool movies, and especially we're not including Logan.
I really would be curious if some of our listeners out there who are good faith listeners, that's what we say, right? Like someone who genuinely would be willing to give this movie or this entire franchise a second chance without taking in the preconceived notions. And I don't know how much that plays a fact. Cause like I said, I hadn't seen it. And so there's some exhilaration from that, but I would love to hear, like, I noticed, for example, Tanner mentioned that he's always kind of liked this movie, but just was kind of like told like, that's not the case, you know? And I'm just kind of curious how many people would be willing to go through this X-Men journey in good faith and get to this movie and feel like it's still 22%. I could buy that you have some issues with the aliens and the things we talked about. I don't think I could buy anything less than 55%. This would be the best 20% movie I've ever seen, if that's the case.
Yeah.
I just think the time period and all that stuff affected it. So I'm sticking with it, man. This is crazy. I think this is like a 75%er. Like, yeah. I wouldn't say,
man, it's so weird.
I wouldn't say 80% where it's like, go watch it. This is a really good movie. But I'd be like very happy to have had walked out of the theaters having seen that, I think.
But man, that's the crazy thing to me. And I'm not trying to be controversial, but like.
Right. I'm not either, I don't think. I genuinely approach it with good faith.
Like First Class, I'm double checking right now to make sure that I'm, 86% on Rotten Tomatoes to 22 here. And again, I know like First Class, you know, it introduces the versions of these characters. It had a lot of like, it was the movie that kind of had to try to put the whole franchise back on track.
But
like,
again, and timing, I recognize Robbie, all that. Think about that, you know, like rebooting was a fresh thing then, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. To me, it's just like, you're totally right that there are things that movie does much better than this one. But I just feel like watching First Class, both in the context of this rewatch and having seen it like every now and then when it's just kind of on somewhere, like there are moments that are just like really cheesy to me. And I would have expected
there are cheesy moments here. Yes.
Like if someone asked you just to kind of make a prediction before we started this watch, I feel like I would have said, you know, yeah, like First Class has some cheesy moments. And I probably would have even said something like, you know, it's nothing compared to what we would wind up getting later in like good Apocalypse point. And Dark Phoenix. But
right, that's how I felt. Yeah, that was my notion ahead of time. Yep.
Yeah. And now it's like, there are things there, like there is fat in that movie that feels weirdly trimmed here. And that's what I'm getting at. And so I'm curious, like, I really want to see how other people feel about this and how they respond in general. But like, I know that the First Class thing feels like an intentionally controversial thing, but it's just, that is my honest takeaway from my journey here, is that this is one of the stronger X-Men entries, period. And I think the second best Fassbender McAvoy.
That sounds crazy. I should play the shock sound, the crowd murmur, but you're right. That's the thing. And I remember my First Class episode. If you go back and listen to that, my reaction was exactly what you just said. My memory of it, my preconceived notion was, oh, this is a really good movie. It has 86%. I remember liking it. It rebooted the character so well. This is what the X-Men should be. And then I watched it. And you remember what I said? I was like, man, this just wasn't as cool as I thought it was going to be. It was more like 60% is what I think I said. It is cheesy. And I told you how, like, I think the Jackman score unfortunately plays into that a little bit. There are times where I'm like the training montage, some of the relationships between the really young people, which I think this movie benefits from getting rid of some of those people, to be honest, like they're not in this story. And then also everyone told me that First Class isn't cheesy and wait till you get to Dark Phoenix. It's the cheesy one. And I got here and I'm like, dude, outside of a couple of lines, maybe, and maybe outside of a couple alien explanations, there's no cheese at all. All the relationships work. And even the way Magneto and Jean talk is moving when they see each other. Like, it's just, it's totally not cheesy. So
yeah,
listen, I'll close the episode by saying, listeners, if you still think we're crazy, I get it. That's okay. I would legitimately ask you, when's the last time you watched Dark Phoenix? And then if it's recently, I would ask you, when's the last time you watched Dark Phoenix with an open mind? And if the answer to those questions is still recently and you've done that and you still don't like it, that's okay. But I do think that this movie is falling victim to people not really giving it a fair shake. It's crazy. It is one of my favorite X-Men movies I've watched, which is what you said in this crazy. My daughter is just getting up from her nap. Hi, Violet. I'm recording my podcast, Daddy Talk Radio. This is Daddy Radio. Do you want to say bye to our listeners? You say goodbye?
No.
No. Okay. So, Robbie, that's my take. You want to close us out with anything?
Yeah. Well,
next time, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. This is when it gets fun because I think, yes, the next watch here on Friends from Work Plus is the New Mutants. I think before that, we will have watched Deadpool on the main feed, right?
Oh, man. I don't know the schedule that closely, but yeah.
I think
We're almost there, man.
I know. And I should say it differently, I guess, regardless of kind of what the real time is. I think I would recommend people, especially if you're listening back to these, do it that way. Because I think if we're kind of going chronological here, you know, recognizing that essentially things restarted with Days of Future Past, then we went 70s, 80s, 90s. Deadpool takes place, I think, basically when it released, like roughly in the mid 2010s. And so this is going to be like the next time we're in the X-Men world, like the next spot in this timeline chronologically is Deadpool. And then I think the idea is that New Mutants takes place either right around Deadpool 2 or between Deadpool 2 and Logan. Now, again, we are not totally out of the woods yet with our weird timeline stuff. So there are caveats there. But I think, like, I just wanted to close saying that's kind of where we're at. Like, we have now finished the X-Men stuff, like, strictly speaking, and we're now going to move into, like, Deadpool, I think, and there are reasons to believe this, operates within this timeline. Logan, again, I think is its own thing, but I think it's good for people to be thinking, like, the next check-in that we're going to have with this universe will now be, I guess, roughly 2 decades down the line. And then, you know, it'll be interesting to see how coherent all of that is. Obviously, Deadpool, the movie, came out before Dark Phoenix. And I think Dark Phoenix came out after Deadpool 2 as well. So it's kind of a, it's all weird and confusing. But I think it'll be fun to kind of, like, actually now finish out this watch. And my last thing, did you notice the Dazzler appearance that we got at that party early on in Dark Phoenix?
I don't even know if I know who that is.
Okay, fair. No. That is correct. That's the right answer. I think Dazzler does show up briefly in X-Men 97 in that in the Remember It episode. But I wanted to end on this note because that is, I think, the only time we've ever gotten Dazzler in a live action setting. She's basically like a mutant pop star. So you probably know the scene I'm thinking of where it's like at the party and she's like, they're like all the twinkly lights and everything. It's this like long blonde hair singer. I say that because you and I have not talked about this on the main feed, but I feel like we probably should soon. There have been all these rumors that Taylor Swift might appear in Deadpool and Wolverine playing this Dazzler character. And I don't know if that's true in any way, but I just, it is interesting to note that Taylor Swift is famously very close to Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively. The director of Deadpool and Wolverine appeared in Taylor Swift's All Too Well short film. And Marvel has suddenly out of nowhere started pushing Dazzler again as a significant character in the comics, just greenlit a solo series. She had a prominent spot in the most recent like X-Men preview comic. And the Dazzler comics have been like skyrocketing in value on eBay, kind of out of nowhere, okay. Which doesn't mean anything. That's all speculation. But kind of a fitting way to end this as we're moving into the Deadpool portion here.
Cool. I want you to know that I do know the person you're talking about, and I've heard the rumor about Taylor Swift. I think it'd be really fun. I just was not responding because my daughter's sitting right next to me, so I had my phone on mute. Other than that, I know everything you're talking about. Yeah, I'm with you. So that'll be fascinating to see if that's the case. It does seem like there's a shot at that happening, although I thought I had read somewhere that it's not going to happen. Who knows? We're going to find out really soon. In a month.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it, but I will say, man, if this movie is going to be big on its own, which it is, I can only imagine like the Taylor Swift cameo boost that this would get at the box office. But in general, I'm really excited to reach the Deadpool era here of the rewatch. So I think next time we talk here, we probably, at least you and I, will have seen that, and it'll be fun to kind of keep this going all the way through the grand finale.
No doubt. Don't hate us, listeners. We love you so much. Thanks for taking this journey with us. We're almost to the pinnacle, as Robbie's talking about, and I can't wait to get there. Thank you for listening to me get excited. This was as much fun for me as I've had in a while. I can't fake passion. And for whatever reason, who would have thought Dark Phoenix was the movie I was going to get passionate about? Just give me some grace. Thank you for giving me grace. Love you guys. We'll see you next time here on Friends from Work Plus.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.